Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like geography, storytelling and literature, history, and ethics. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined today by one of the pioneering writers in the field of interactive media and digital storytelling since the early 1990s, Carolyn Handler Miller. She's currently revising the fourth edition of her classic, Digital Storytelling, A Creator's Guide to Interactive Entertainment, from Focal Press. Her work as a digital storyteller includes entertainment, educational, informational, and training projects made for platforms such as CD-ROMs, kiosks, the web, smart toys, and integrated media projects. Her clients include major media companies, Fortune 500 corporations, and educational institutions. In addition, Carolyn is an international speaker and teacher on the subject of digital storytelling. So we'd like to talk to you about the implications of digital storytelling for the general public, the ways that participants, players, visitors, and users develop relationships with stories that are on digital platforms. Is that something you can speak to a little bit?
Yes. And when you said that, what came into my mind immediately was Lonely Girl 15.
What is Lonely Girl 15?
It was a series that was done through YouTubes. The conceit was this girl is homeschooled. She is very lonely, and her parents seem to belong to some kind of cult, and she posts videos.
That's genius.
But she's not a real person. She's a created character. And so people would write her emails. They'd post YouTube videos about her situation, warning her of things. She became friends with a boy, and he wanted to come visit her, and they were very afraid he was going to try to force himself upon her. And they warned her not to let him into the room. Then they discovered that she was an actress, and this whole thing was a fictional story. And people were outraged. They were furious. They felt they'd been hoodwinked. What's interesting is that they've done other dramas like this using YouTube. They sometimes will try to be as if a real kid is doing them, and sometimes not. Sometimes they'll let you know it's a fiction. But I was listening to one person who was creating, it was the movie Eighth Grade. That was about a girl who was blogging, and she was a character in this movie. But he said he would study YouTube videos and how these mostly girls would address the audience and have her do the same kind of awkward, hello, guys. I'm so-and-so. I'm glad you're watching my video.
You know? Looking over their shoulder occasionally to see if mom's coming into the room.
Yes, yes, yes. It's almost like a whole genre of social media stories using video.
Lonely Girl 15, they didn't say it was fiction. They didn't say it was real. People presumed it was real, though, because it came off as a YouTube video diary.
And they'd actually shoot it out of focus sometimes.
So do you think that this is a case where people want to claim ownership of what they think of as a story? Well, in this case, I guess it's not – they didn't think of it as a story. They thought of it as
they thought she was a real person.
Yeah. But they're treating it like a story, the same way that you become invested in a character.
But as if she's your friend. And imagine if you made a friend and you really liked this person and they seemed to understand you and you laughed at the same things and just had a lot of fun together, and then you discovered that she was just an artificial character. Wouldn't you feel somewhat betrayed?
You're talking about the betrayal of a real versus not real character, but yes. I'm not sure there's a difference.
But
always,
I think with, as opposed to watching a TV show, just using Lonely Girl as an example, people got invested in her story and tried to help her. And they were connected to her, they felt, in a personal way, like warning her about this alleged boyfriend and trying to say that her family is going to take her blood for some ritual.
And so maybe the difference there is where there are times that I when I was younger and watching a lot of television, would be compelled to want to throw a brick at the TV and say, how could you do that to her? Or don't let him talk to you that way.
Go down into the basement.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. In these digital platforms, it seems like there is a way to get much more invested because you almost expect that your feedback can actually be heard.
Possibly that's part of why people got so angry, is because they had gone living in Lonely Girl 15's world, not realizing it was falsely constructed. I mean, not realizing the terms of the engagement.
the social contract that was happening. How long ago was Lonely Girl 15? I'm going to look this up.
It's quite a while ago. And but it's a famous enough example that when they do more of these dramas using YouTube videos, it's often a model.
I presumed it was older because in the modern era, the last few years, there would have been some kind of crowdfunding probably happening for this young lady.
You're so right.
Which would make people feel even more betrayed when they started kicking down their money for someone who doesn't exist.
I do want to talk a little bit, since you brought it up, on the power of crowdfunding. I know a lot of creative professionals are using crowdfunding or Patreon so that their audiences can determine which stories they tell next. I'm a big fan of a YouTube channel, and they let their Patreon supporters decide which stories they're going to tell. They tell history stories or mythology stories, and if you can lay down the most money, you get the stories you want. I'm just wondering to what extent you see authors or creation platforms influenced by fans in that way.
The people I know who use crowdfunding have a particular project that they're trying to finance. So they're going with a particular purpose. It isn't choose A, B, or C. And we'll do whichever gets the most votes. So, like the Halloween story I was talking about, that they're in their third season now. They go on a crowdfunding source. It might be Kickstarter or Indiegogo, and they say, you know, we're getting into production now. We need more money to make this happen. But they do court their fans, and they try to build up a sense of excitement about the story. So there's a lot of work that goes into just the fundraising aspect. My husband is a screenwriter, and he's getting two movies off the ground, and he's using crowdfunding, which he's never done before. And so he lays in these little nuggets into the Kickstarter, whichever he's using, to excite people about the story and hope that he'll get fans of the story before it ever is made.
What do you mean by a nugget?
Well, like his story has to do with, it's a road trip and it ends up in Las Cruces. So he posts pictures about Las Cruces, and he's working with people in Las Cruces to interest them in this particular story. And so he went down there and took a lot of photographs of things that exist down in Las Cruces and gets them excited about their hometown that will be functioning in this story.
You know, that's interesting, because it seems like that's another way that people in the modern digital age can get invested in a story, whether it's non-traditional digital storytelling or more traditional storytelling using these new platforms, which is the whole idea that you can almost preview or tease a story or a world before it's even created yet.
Yes.
Seems very new. I mean, it used to be we could see trailers for movies and maybe the movie hadn't actually been completely cut yet, but it's very different now, where you can disseminate these nuggets, as you called them,
before it's even produced.
Done. Or I mean, is he still working on the script? Is the script actually...
The script is done, but it's open to changes.
Right.
And there are changes that happen.
But it's not like the thing's been filmed. It's not
set in concrete
yet,
by any means.
Do you think that people get more invested both positively and negatively if they also are kicking down actual funds to help see a story produced?
I think that they become more invested.
Do you think they can get angry if it doesn't?
If it doesn't go, it doesn't pan out. Yeah.
Or if it doesn't go the way they like.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking of.
Yeah, you get disappointed. I know one of my young cousins did a music album, and she's a lovely singer. But I thought, what if this album she's producing turns out to be a dud, and everybody's given money for it?
Or if your favorite character gets killed halfway.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen enough films, books, and even non-traditional narratives where I'm surprised when my favorite or what seems to be a main character gets killed off a third of the way through the thing. And it's not that I'm disappointed, but I'm also thinking, well, I wasn't like an investor either in the way that people can become invested in these things in the modern age.
Well, and it makes me curious if storytellers are creating worlds where people want to be. We have a few examples of worlds that have been compelling to people for generations now. And I know the creators of those worlds treat them very differently. Like Star Trek, the Star Trek Extended Universe is one example where Gene Roddenberry's original vision has been changed and twisted, and people have added on, and there are different ships and technologies and multiverses and whatever, so that people can tell all sorts of stories within this umbrella. And nobody's saying, no, that's not canonical. You can't say that. J.K. Rowling's one example of an author who's altered her own stories in response to user feedback. And I'm thinking, notably, when there was one reader who said, well, you never say what race these students are. You give some physical descriptions, but brown hair and brown eyes, that could be anything. So they re-envisioned most of the main characters of Harry Potter as people of color. And J.K. Rowling came back around and said, you know what, you're right, Hermione was black.
Wow.
And from now on, I'm going to cast her that way. But George Lucas is one who won't tolerate any nonsense from fans trying to re-envision or even say Han shot first, right?
George Lucas will revise his stories, but no one else better.
Right.
But he's still keeping that godlike role.
Right, exactly.
And he makes that very clear when people say, well, how could you alter these crucial scenes from a film that has informed my entire life? He says, it's my movie, and I will do with it what I want.
So I guess, how do you see this relationship between fans or people who feel like they have this sort of ownership or feel like they're ready to pack up and move to Hogwarts and teach History of Magic tomorrow versus the creators who their authority used to be completely unquestioned, and now it seems like it's eroding in certain ways?
It takes getting used to as a creator, but it's exciting when the fans come back and say, you know, how about doing it this way? And sometimes their ideas are terrific, and you've got to acknowledge that. You don't know everything. You know, you're not God. But I know a lot of writers have problems with this, and they can't handle it, and they just can't work in this arena. To me, it's fascinating. And the potential for the kinds of new stories you can do is wonderful.
Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us about digital storytelling and about all the amazing technologies available and out there.
Well, I've really enjoyed it. I could be talking to you for days, I think.
I think we all could.
we'll have to take that one to the interactive branching version of this yeah. Online.
Yeah, we'll see you in Second Life.
Augmenting Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire.